Adjusted for inflation, the Bond series is the highest-grossing film franchise of all time, pulling in more than $5 billion to date. Skyfall, 007's 25th outing, took in $87.8 million this past weekend, the highest domestic opening ever for a Bond film.
You made such a bold entrance into a little drama.
Did I overcomplicate the plot?
Who doesn't appreciate the occasional twists, Mr.
Bond? James Bond.
Daniel Craig there, and 50 years after James Bond's film debut, gadgets, outrageous chase scenes, and cleverly named babes and villains are still a draw. The character of Bond does change, however, an evolution that journalist Tom Jacobs recently wrote about in Pacific Standard. Jacobs considers the changing Bond as a reflection of prevailing notions of fears and heroism of his time. Tom, welcome to Word of Mouth.
It's always my pleasure.
James Bond is one of the most unexciting names imaginable. Tell us about its origins and the origins of the character.
It's true, and deliberately so. In the early 1950s, Ian Fleming, who's the author of the James Bond novels, was an Englishman living in Jamaica. And he wanted to come up with an extremely dull, uninteresting man to be at the center of these novels. He wanted this to be somebody to whom things happen. And so he was trying to find a very suitably dull name, and he looked on his bookshelf. Well, I'm embellishing here a bit, but he very possibly looked at his bookshelf and saw the name of this ornithologist who authored his Field Guide to the Birds of the West Indies. His name was James Bond. Of course, this guy became far more famous for his fictional counterpart. But anyway, he thought, that's it. That's a really dull name for my spy. This is the sort of name that could just blend in anywhere, which is what he wanted the spy to be able to do. So James, the fictional James Bond, was born.
Well, and it's interesting. James Bond now means such a different thing. And I guess that's the point that you're making, that we hang all of our sort of projections and hopes and I guess, associations with what it means to be a spy on James Bond.
It is. It's fascinating because, as you point out, this series, 50 years now, still going amazingly strong. And that clearly wouldn't happen if Bond wasn't able to change with the times, because you know the same things people want to see in a hero in the early 60s in the middle of the Cold War isn't quite the same thing as people want to see as a hero in the post 9/11 world. So because Ian Fleming had this sort of vague notion of Bond, it was very easy for succeeding generations of screenwriters to sort of shape him to fit the cultural notion of what we want a hero to be. Mm. So, you know, so the early 60s, that first Bond, Sean Connery, of course, who's still arguably the best, was very insouciant, very sort of it was the Rat Pack era, and he could you can just imagine him hanging out with Frank and Dean and Sammy and those guys, it was just twinkle in his eye and very, shaken, not stirred martini, all that sort of thing. But then we got into, the 70s after the Kennedy assassination and all, and the counterculture revolution, and the whole idea of heroism became a little bit passe. And so the Bond, especially with Roger Moore, then became kind of almost a self-parody. Mm-hmm. Those movies were so winking that you couldn't take them seriously. Because I think the argument certainly is among scholars that we just couldn't really believe in the idea of heroes at that point. So our James Bond reflected that and became something of a self-parody, as I said.
How about in this post 9/11? Daniel Craig is making a very big hit as Bond. What is his Bond?
His Bond is very different in many ways. It's much grittier Bond. I don't think it's a stretch to say that after we got hurt literally in 9/11, we were attacked on our soil, that we wanted a. And I say we as Americans, because even though it's a British franchise, but still, the in the Western world, let's say, we felt the pain of terrorism more than we had ever done before. Well, I don't think it's a coincidence that Daniel Craig's Bond feels pain. I mean, when he gets shot or punched, you actually feel it. I mean, it's not. Connery especially was really effortless. And
in
Craig's
torture scenes,
really
in
effortful.
Fight scenes, he just sort of, you know, brushes himself off.
I mean, Craig, you know, you feel it. You can feel his pain. And also, Craig is more of much more of a working class guy. Connery seemed very aristocratic, almost kind of Count of Monte Cristo descendant. Craig is much more, you can imagine him growing up on the tough streets of some bad neighborhood in London. I mean, which is probably a more realistic portrait of a man who would grow up to be a professional killer, which is what he is, after all. I talked to a couple scholars about we think of ourselves as less naive and wanting more realism in our fantasy action films. I mean, it's, you know, arguably we just, you know, we're deceiving ourselves in that sense. But I don't think audiences today would accept this idea of a one percenter, if you will, who comes out and saves us all. You know, I mean, I think that idea is gone. We need somebody a little tougher than that, a little bit who's got some street cred. And boy, does Daniel Craig bring that to the role. He's pretty brilliant.
Tom Jacobs with the 99%er Bond. Great always to talk with you, Tom.
My pleasure.
Tom's a veteran journalist and staff writer with the Pacific Standard. You'll find a link to read his article called The Least Interesting Man in the World at wordofmouthradio.org.